You're listening to the Experience Points Podcast, episode number 185, for the week of August 22nd, 2012.
Welcome back, everybody. This is the Experience Points Podcast. My name is Scott Juster.
And my name is George Albor.
We're the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net. That's a website we created and dedicated to the serious but not humorless analysis of video games and culture. And maybe instead of hello and welcome, I should have said Guten Tag. We're taking a virtual trip to Germany this week.
Cologne, Germany, in fact. Home of Cologne, I presume.
I don't know. We'll have to ask Christian about that. We're going to visit Gamescom, the enormous games conference that is held in Germany every year.
Scott, you say enormous, but how enormous do you actually mean?
How enormous is it? So I remember I thought E3 was pretty big when we went just earlier this summer, mm-hmm. and I pulled up a Joystick article about the attendance numbers, and E3 is supposedly maybe like 50,000 to 60,000 people. Gamescom is approximately 250,000 people.
That is crazy. That's a quarter of a million people.
Yeah, there in a city to look at games.
I'm surprised the city can sustain that many people.
You know, you have to have the infrastructure to do that. Like, the only city that could do that in the States would probably be like Vegas or something.
Yeah, maybe Los Angeles.
Maybe LA, but LA's pretty packed still. Like, I mean
the biggest conference halls in the state are like in Mississippi or Georgia or something like that.
So you'd have to just go out to the boonies or something. Like, you'd have to go out to like Ted Turner land somewhere.
Nobody wants to go there.
No. We've got to stay on our coasts. So a fair amount of news came out of Gamescom. I feel like there was more. It's kind of weird, but there's more like game relevant news. Like, we spent a lot of E3 talking about the Surface and like marketing techniques and like corporate strategy. And I feel like the news that I saw here was more, strangely enough, was more games focused.
Yeah, and more IPs, more interesting things that are just look like it. You know what it is? Gamescom is similar to PAX in that it's very much for consumers.
Right.
In a way that E3 is sort of more targeting, you know, the broader market.
Right.
So, you know, those 250,000 people, probably 249,000 of them were just there because they love playing video games, you know? So yeah. I think that there's something to say for like, oh, just could look at this thing because there's so many people here waiting to be excited for a new IP.
Yeah. So, you know, in that spirit, George and I decided we would just have a quick roundup of some of the standout things that we saw following it in the news. And, you know, we'll trade off with some stories and discuss a few of them here. So do you want to kick us off, George?
Yeah, well, in the spirit of excitement for games, let's talk about some of the new games that made an appearance at the event. And right. First up, I want to talk about Media Molecule's new game called Tearaway. And, yeah. Of course, Media Molecule is the team behind Little Big Planet. They've been working on that series for, like, 6 years now, right? They have another Little Big Planet Vita coming out pretty soon. But this is a new IP that uses the Vita. It's still in the spirit of Little Big Planet, mm-hmm. but it's very different in the sense that it's uses the back touch to control and change the environment of a 2D paper figure as he sort of navigates the world. And it's great because I think Media Molecule really shines at making games that are just jovial. You know, like, mm-hmm. they capture that so well.
Right.
And for it to be using, I think, the back touch screen to literally interact with the world in a way that just, you know, it's not necessarily the most clever, the most original idea, but I feel like it's the most well-spirited one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's always hard to tell, obviously, from a preview, how gimmicky something like this is going to be.
Right.
But, you know, you have all of these toys when it comes to the Vita. You know, you have the front and back touch. There's accelerometers, there's cameras, you know, like, and there's so much room for creativity there. That it's nice to see someone like Media Molecule, who has a pretty good track record with this sort of thing. You know, taking advantage of all the native benefits of the Vita.
Yeah. They had a great image in the video of a player taking a picture of a piece of cloth, for example, mm-hmm. and using it to put it on their cow or their elk, in this case. Mm-hmm. And there are other examples of using your finger to knock away enemies or move platforms. And I just love the idea of being able to interact in that way. And I guess it's just because it's Media Molecule, and I feel like I have some faith in their ability right. to make it cutesy without making it sort of
it's
mundane.
Like pandering or something.
Yeah, you know? It doesn't feel like it's coming from a place where they just want to make a kid's game and knock that off the yeah. plate and be done with it, right? Like, yeah. they genuinely want to make a compelling game that is, you know, good and safe for the whole family to play.
And if this sort of thing catches on, it's clear that they stick with their projects.
Right.
You know, Little Big Planet 1 got updates for, like, years after it was released. Little Big Planet 2, you know, is continuing to enjoy support. So, like, if this does take off, it looks like it could be another, I don't know, like, universe or you know, stable of characters for them, basically.
I'm glad that in your notes, though, you marked what I was also thinking, which is that if your skin tone differs on the fingers, it right. might be, because it literally shows a picture of human fingers poking through the paper in the game.
Yeah. I was thinking about that same thing. I mean, it's to describe it a bit, it's a third-person platform / adventure looking game, and so your fingers are coming up through the floor as you're looking at the character from a top down view. And you're right, I was like, well, how about the swarthier folks out there? Like, what's up? You know, what will happen? And, like, you know, it is, we make light of it now, but I think it's important, you know, like, especially in a company so dedicated to customization as a Media Molecule, that you need to be sensitive to your entire audience, you know?
Yeah. Well, maybe they'll let you take a picture of your finger.
I mean, why not? Like, they let you take a picture of any, like, pattern and texture they showed that as part of the demo, so it would make sense, I think.
Right, but then people start taking pictures of inappropriate things.
Well, that's always the problem. I think Little Big Planet had to deal with that too.
Yeah. Well, let's move on. What else do you think was interesting from Gamescom?
Okay. Well, let's keep going with the games and talk about Rain. It's a PSN downloadable, right?
Correct.
And it had that. I don't know what the score of that is. The score to the trailer was the same score that they use in a million different movies, including Ocean's 11.
Really?
Yeah. <Wow. laughs> And it looks like an adventure game where you control a character that is invisible, and so you can only see him when he interacts with the environment. Like, if he steps in a puddle, you can see wet footsteps going across the environment. Mm. Or if you venture out into the rain, you can start to see an outline of the body.
And it seems to use that as a stealth mechanic as well, in that it looks like sometimes when you're being chased, you're only chased if they see you silhouetted in the rain.
Yeah, yeah. It looked kind of, I really liked it because it was, you know, obviously it was different, right? It was like one of the many, like, downloadable titles we have these days that is doing something unique. And it was quiet, which was a nice thing.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. like there's a lot of games in Gamescom that were kind of off the beaten path, especially compared to E3. And I like that someone is taking a chance with a new, you know, obviously, again, a new IP.
There was someone on my Twitter feed, and I'm sorry because I don't remember who, but they said that Rain and titles like this, and I think it's no coincidence that a lot of the games we'll be talking about on this podcast are being published by Sony, that this is why it's exciting to look at what a company comes up with when they're losing the sort of market share.
Oh, right. I know exactly what you're talking about. Stephen Totillo wrote a
right,
big article,
right.
And he was like, remember how awesome the Dreamcast and the GameCube were? Like, it's because they had to try crazy things to get people's attention.
Yeah, you know? Like, what they're putting forward are things that are really unique and stand out. And it's not just Rain, but Rain is definitely one of them, right? Like, it's got, like you said, it's quiet, unlike so many other games.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's using, I mean, I guess Rain is like a popular mechanic every now and then, but like it still seems like they're willing to take a risk with how that is represented in the game.
And also using sophisticated physics and ideas like stealth, but doing it in a narrow focused context rather than, I mean, like Uncharted and games like that are amazing, and like seeing the physics of a huge tidal wave hitting a ship is astounding. But right. It can be equally impressive doing it on a small scale that makes you look at the minute details rather than the huge picture.
Right. And since it's such a good segue, case in point, Puppeteer.
Yeah.
Also, I believe is it for the PlayStation Move?
I don't think so. I mean, I think it's just a PlayStation title.
So this is a similar like paper craft type of game, yeah. In which, I don't know, it's almost, it has the feel of Kirby, the yarn game.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's a good point. I didn't even think about that.
In that, you know, everything is very textured, everything's really cute, and a lot of the core mechanic is a character using scissors to cut through the environment itself.
Mm-hmm.
And again, like, it's really colorful, it looks really cool, it's eye-catching, and it seems like a simple and fun game in much the same way that, you know, stacking or Costume Quest is.
Yeah, that's the thing that I thought of when I first saw it. It has that kind of early 20th century theater art style, side-scrolling, but there's you can see the curtains of a theater on either side of the screen.
Right.
I mean, most of this is like bait to me because those are the types of games that I like the most, you know, mm-hmm. like inventive spins on old genres.
Right.
But it came out of nowhere. Like, I had heard zero about this.
I had never heard of it either, yeah.
And it's just so strange that, I mean, this must have been pretty much ready for E3, yeah. You know? Yeah. And as was all of the, most likely a lot of the Vita stuff that they talked about, you know? Like, where was all this stuff, you know?
Yeah. Because this is sort of, I mean, this is sort of what you should be showing, right? If you want to grab people's attentions, because it is so different. I mean, especially at E3, when our complaint was that there were so many shooters.
Right.
You know, like, to see some, not one, not two, but like four or five different games from Sony.
Yeah.
Capturing that sort of childlike glee.
Yeah. I mean, I think, on a somewhat related note, I think that Sony really took advantage of Microsoft not attending Gamescom.
Yeah, that's a really good,
you know, I mean, because yeah, if Microsoft was there, maybe you wouldn't have, you know, the space or the courage to kind of fill up a presentation or a suite of games with these more experimental titles, because, you know, Master Chief would be there sitting in the corner kind of laughing at you, you know,
like, yeah, yeah. I mean, sticking grenades on stage.
You know, they took full advantage of not having their chief competitor there, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, what else? What should we go on to now? Oh, this was at E3, but I unfortunately missed it, and I only learned of it just now at Gamescom, but Tokyo Jungle?
Oh, yeah.
And it has now subsequently been announced, you know, officially for North America, too. I just learned about that today, or today as we were recording, and as I wrote in my notes, this game looks like my kind of dumb. Like, post-apocalyptic Tokyo looks a lot like, you know, what was the remake of The Last Man on Earth?
Oh, Homeward Bound.
You know, like the jungle is starting to retake Tokyo, and like the animal kingdom has reasserted itself, and you play as various species of animals. In kind of like a brawler / beat 'em up with survival elements.
It's like 12 Monkeys, but you're the animals that escaped from the zoo.
I mean, you play as a Pomeranian. You can play as like the Pomeranian faction. there's elephants. There's a raptor somehow.
Yeah, well, you know, it's the future, Scott.
Right, so. You know, whatever. I mean, maybe that's what caused the apocalypse.
It's such a strange game because it seems like it's very combat heavy.
Yeah.
But you can play as like baby chickens.
Yeah.
So I don't really know what way the baby chickens are supposed to overcome the pack of hyenas.
Yeah.
But apparently, well, it's possible.
Pure numbers, you know, thousands of baby chicks just envelop.
This brings us back to the giant duck versus many horses things.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, who's going to win? One hyena or a hyena's worth of baby chickens?
I mean, this type of game is for those stupid drunk arguments that you have, you know? How many Pomeranians would it take to take down an elephant? Well, now we get to know. And, like, you know, it has all the trappings of, like, you know, a wacky Japanese game that also looks surprisingly deep in some respects, like having to, like, you know, worry about food and, like, faction alignment and, like,
yeah,
you know, exploring the environment and stuff like that. Oh, I didn't see, like, picture confirmations of this, but I have read that as a piece of downloadable content, there will be a salaryman.
Salaryman.
No, a salary man.
Oh, not just, salary. Okay. No,
like a Japanese businessman something. Who makes his living with a certain company or whatever, who just happens to find himself in this situation.
He's the one survivor of the apocalypse?
Yeah, pretty much.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Now, so, if you can control a pack of those men.
How many could take down an elephant? Anyway, another weird, like, quirky game that kind of gets overshadowed at a place like E3 that pops up in a place like Gamescom.
Well, you know, I should say, though, what a perfectly timed release, right? Like, no wonder it's coming to North America, finally, because there's so many games set in the post-apocalyptic world.
Mm-hmm.
People, I think, are ready for parody.
Right. Yeah, that's true. Because, you know, we've spent how many years now, like, in the Fallout universe, and even, like, you know, the upcoming The Last of Us is in a
DayZ Killzone.
Yeah, it looks like that.
Yeah, it looks like The Last of Us, except for there are chickens and stuff.
DLC.
DLC, man, more animals. They said something like, what, 40 animals?
Yeah, it seemed like a pretty good roster.
I mean, I think that's a day one buy, Scott.
We're gonna live stream this.
I mean, finally, we'll bring chicken fighting into popularity in the U.S. again.
And completely legal, too.
Just continue the silly and weird. Let's talk a little bit about Until Dawn.
Okay.
So this is a horror game. Well, right. It's quote-unquote horror.
Yeah.
I've watched the trailer several times at this point. There's really absolutely nothing terrifying about that game in the slightest.
I think it looks kind of scary, but not for the reasons that the developers probably think.
So this is a game that is intentionally inspired by films like Scream and Halloween, and the campy teenager stuck in a wood, and there's sexual tension, and sexual tension is surrounded by murder. And it looks like it's one of those awkward, yes, you're aware of the genre that you're playing in, but you're not aware enough to not repeat the same stupid mistakes.
Yeah.
And again, this is just based off the trailer. I have no, maybe the game's going to be awesome. Right. But some of the dialogue in that trailer is just painful.
Yeah, it's hard to tell from a trailer, but there's a very fine line between knowing it's bad and reveling in it and just being bad.
Yeah, you know, there was a film that came out recently that was, you know, most famously worked on by Joss Whedon called Cabin in the Woods.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Cabin in the Woods is a fantastic horror film. Anyone who's into horror, and people who are not into horror, should see this movie for the bravado that it has, right? It's so self-aware and decides to go, okay, well, we're a horror movie. Let's ruin the horror genre for everybody else, right? This is a film that I have a hard time believing anyone can make this type of movie ever again, because they're done with it. Like, this Cabin in the Woods completed what horror was meant to be, and now everything else has to be something else. It could be scary, but it can't be horror in the way that it looks like Until Dawn is trying to do, right? Mm-hmm. Knowing the pedigree of Cabin in the Woods, knowing how successful it was, I'm very aware that you can have a self-aware and interesting game set in that environment, but you've really got to pull it off with tact. And I have a hard time believing that anyone really has that power.
Do you think that Until Dawn will benefit at all from the Move, since it's a Sony Move-based game?
I mean, from what I see in the trailer, probably not.
Yeah.
I mean, it depends. Like, you know, if it's really self-aware and campy, I could see scenarios where it could work really well, right? Like, there's the classic scene in really terrible horror film where, you know, you're undoing the girl's bra or something like that, and then an axe flies at you from off the screen or something.
Right.
You know,
or trying to unlock the door, you know, while something is happening.
Or like you're going upstairs and like the killer's chasing you and you have to close the door and force it against them, right? Like there are scenes where movement is really important in those films, and I think the Move could really add a nice touch to that. But again, it's got to be self-aware. If it's taking itself too seriously, then inevitably when the Move doesn't quite work the way you want it to, it's going to create dissonance, and it's going to not be scary anymore. But if it's never scary from the get-go, then maybe messing up is just part of the the hilarity of the situation.
It's in a weird place because I feel like the Move is probably the most accurate motion control option we have on the consoles right now. Between the Wii and the Kinect and the Move, like the Move seems like the most competent one, but it's still subject to problems. So it's hard to do a straight up, you have to completely rely on the wand style game.
Right.
Have you taken a look at Double Fine Happy Action Theater?
I have. And see, but that fits, I feel, the mistakes of that very well, right?
Because
they're using it in a really silly and not serious way. Like if Double Fine made a horror game, I think Until Dawn might be what it would look like if they were very tongue-in-cheek.
Because I mean, that's what they do, right? You know, they know, they make use of the weird jankiness of the Kinect. And so I think if you, you know, the problem in horror movies is that everyone is like serially incompetent.
Right.
And so if you use the Move controller to make everyday actions harder for comedic effect, I think that could be interesting. It would have to be pretty funny because you're the butt of that joke.
Yeah.
You know, you have to act out the incompetent character.
You're the one who decided to run upstairs.
Right. Hey, let's split up. You know, like, open the door, it's jammed. And you're just like waggling it furiously. You know, like that could be kind of funny. Yeah. But for some reason, the trailer strikes me as a bit more on the serious side, like horror movies, you know, the original Halloween rather than, you know, the subsequent reboots in the 2000s.
Right, right.
We'll see. It's not like, I mean, I don't think it could do any worse than most of the Move things out there, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
It's nice to see something that's not just like a wizard, you know?
Yeah. Well, now I want Double Fine to make a horror game.
Get on it, Double Fine.
They're not busy, right?
Yeah, they're only making, like, what, four games now or something like that?
Something easy.
Okay, like, what else do we have here?
I think we should talk about Remember Me.
Okay, yeah, I think so too. I don't know a huge amount about this.
Well, there's really not much information about the game, right?
Yeah.
There's one trailer, and that's basically it.
Yeah.
And for those who haven't seen the trailer, it looks very much like Blade Runner meets Total Recall. Or okay, I should say, it looks very much like the new Total Recall, which is also to say, not particularly good.
Right. It looks like kind of a Minority Report style world.
It looks like it's composed of genre conventions, right?
Yeah. I mean, for God's sakes, the setting is Neo-Paris, you know?
Like. Wait, that's great. I mean, I'm okay with that. And, you know, you punch a guy and there's, like, weird little cells coming out of them and things like that. It's got the story about memory, which I think could be interesting in the way that Total Recall, the original, was interesting, right?
Yeah.
Like, reality is not completely understood, and it's got, it's almost got some of the same themes as, I would say, Deus Ex has.
Right, right. Once you start engineering things, how can you tell what's natural and what is constructed?
Right, right. So, the one benefit, I would say, that the game looks like it could keep me interested in any significant way is that it's got a female lead.
Who's a newcomer, like it's not, you know.
Yeah, completely new, and it looks like in some places it might, you know, call forth the same ideas that Mirror's Edge or Uncharted does.
Yeah, I mean, especially this, if you look carefully, you can kind of see what type of game it's going to be. Like, it looks, to me, it looks like it will be, you know, there's going to be a fairly heavy combat focus, but there was also some sequences that looked a lot like this style of platforming you get in Uncharted, somewhat scripted but highly dramatic platforming.
Right.
And I think we haven't really had that type of character action game in the Uncharted style in a sci-fi setting yet.
Yeah. I mean, I was thinking the same thing. I think the sci-fi setting is ripe for that.
Right. And, you know, it's going to be a long time until we get to play Star Wars 1313. So, you know, this is kind of, I don't know, I feel I got a similar vibe, you know.
Yeah.
I felt like there was, I was a little bit taken back by some of the weird dialogue choices that they had in the trailer.
Do you mean the "I'm the hunter, why am I being hunted" bit?
Yes, that is exactly what I mean.
Yeah, I'm glad you noticed that. That was so bad.
Yeah, it's not, I don't know. I don't really know much about the developer. I'm not a hunter. I mean, there could be weird localization problems.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, sometimes sci-fi falls into the trap of over-explaining everything that's happening on the screen.
I hear that.
And so I think that could be a potential danger of a game like that.
Yeah. I think that because we haven't gotten something in the sci-fi universe, I think it's instantly compelling regardless.
Right.
Like, I have those same concerns, but considering that it's still so far out, you know, these are things that are theoretically amendable. Right. They can cut that line about being hunted.
Right. And aside from the one or two, like, really kind of gratuitous butt shots in the trailer, it was kind of a nice counterpoint to how to market a game with a female lead who also finds herself in trouble, that probably the Tomb Raider marketing team could learn a thing or two from.
Yeah. I mean, the simple fact that they let her narrate her own adventure in that trailer, I think, is...
Right, I agree. And, you know, Capcom does some interesting things, so, like, it's... I'm glad to see them pick this game up, since apparently it was premiered last Gamescom and had been floating around for a while. Like, it had been cut loose by another company, I forget which one. So it's always nice to see something like that work out rather than just kind of fade away.
I agree. Anything else from Gamescom before we call it a day?
I mean, there was some business stuff that I don't really know too much about, like Origin's coming to the Mac. I've never used Origin.
You too can get software forced upon you. Finally!
You've used Origin a couple times. Yeah. I don't know. Do you see yourself embracing it as opposed to Steam for any future releases?
No. I mean, the only reason I've used it is because I was required to use it.
Right.
So.
And then there was some talk about the PS Plus being finally rolled out to Vita, which was, to me, kind of crazy that it wasn't already on Vita from day one. Like, why not unify that network, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's a great idea. We've talked before about how the PlayStation Plus is actually a surprisingly good deal.
Right. I mean, it's really, they're being, again, it's kind of this thing about, like, the market leader having to kind of work harder. I read just the other day that the free game for PlayStation Plus this month for the European territory is Red Dead Redemption.
Yeah.
What?
That's crazy. Wild. And it was what? Dead Space 2 last cycle.
Right. Yeah. Those are like top tier games that, you know, are multiple award winners. And not only that, they're huge. They're like gigabytes upon gigabytes of games too. Like,
oh yeah. And like, you know, a lot of people didn't play Dead Space 2. Dead Space 3 is right around the corner. It makes perfect sense. Like, pick it up, play it. It's a great right. game. Right. I mean, Red Dead Redemption is, you know, your and I's one of our favorite games.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, and then add to the fact as well that Sony just announced the cross-buy, where if you buy a game, I believe it's either for the PS3 or the Vita, you will get the other version for the other console as well.
Right. So the moral of the story of Gamescom is that Microsoft should have gone, because we because all we did is talk about, like, Sony and some PC stuff this entire episode.
Yeah, I mean, that's the conclusion I came to. And that the Vita's becoming a more and more attractive handheld to buy. I mean,
yeah,
the price is still pretty steep at, like, $250.
Right.
But I think that they're incentivizing the purchases really intelligently.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, whereas Nintendo is just kind of rolling out bigger screens and more Mario, you know, having the cross-play promotions and having the unified network, you know, they're not going quietly, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Well, I think that was a pretty good wrap-up of Gamescom. You know, I bet the Gamescom parties are pretty good.
Oh, probably. I mean, 250,000 people in one place?
And, like, so many beer gardens?
It's basically Burning Man with video games.
Schnitzel everywhere? I think we'll open it up to people now. As always, you know, we welcome any kind of questions or comments at our email address, which is experiencepoints@gmail.com.
And experiencepoints.net is our little Gamescom on the internet. Come by, bring your 249,999 friends with you. And, yeah, pay us a visit.
All right, and until next time, everyone, thanks again for listening, and take it easy.
Bye-bye. I took more